and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. My name is Beth Shank, a registered nurse from Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Laura Anderko, professor at Georgetown University. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Beth. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, will you tell us a bit about yourself and your role right now?
So I've been at Georgetown University School of Nursing and Health Studies for the last 9 years. I hold the endowed chair for values-based healthcare, and I am also director of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health in the Environment, which is a pediatric environmental health specialty unit that serves Region 3 in the U.S.
Cool. So you're very involved with environmental health. Has that always been the case in your career?
No. I first got started and interested in environmental health back in the early 90s. I was a director of a home health agency, and once a month I would do home visits. And one month I made a home visit. There was a caseload for maternal child health. It was called APORS, Adverse Pregnancy Outcome Reporting System. And this was in Illinois. And one of the cases was a baby who was born without a brain. The mom was on Medicaid, and so she was discharged within 24 hours from the hospital. And I needed to make a visit to help her get ready for the baby to die, and to learn a bit more about what may have caused the baby to be born without a brain. And so oftentimes, you know, moms either didn't eat right or smoked or did drugs. And this young mom, who was 18, did everything right. She took her vitamins. She, ate well and didn't do any drugs or smoking. And so I was really kind of befuddled over what might have caused the problem until I walked outside and I spent time looking at the environment. And this little home was tucked amidst an industrial area with lots of both air pollution, but also water pollution. They were right next to a polluted river in the Chicago metro area. And so I really started researching myself to find out what might have been the issue. And that's at the time I reached out to several nurses across the country. There wasn't the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And this really started my journey in learning more about environmental exposures.
Cool. Did you then study that formally after that, or did you learn on your own as continuing?
I learned on my own, and I began ATSDR, and Pat Butterfield had a conference for nurses that were interested in environmental health nursing. So I attended that, and that was really the beginning of learning in more depth about environmental health exposures and beginning my journey in that, working with other nurses who were interested in the impacts of environment on health.
You worked with nurses, you worked with Pat Butterfield, you mm-hmm. Applied this to nursing practice. Tell me why this relates to nursing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really believe that the nursing profession is progressive in its view on the impacts of environment on health. We're everywhere. There are a lot of us. There's millions of us. But we're not only in hospital settings, in public health departments, but we're in schools and workplaces and community organizations. And so we're on the ground. We deal with folks one-on-one in all types of settings where oftentimes these environmental exposures occur, for example, in schools and workplaces. And so I think that for many of these environmental exposures, the primary intervention is to prevent exposure. which rather than trying to treat the illness or the condition once a person is exposed. And I think nurses are very well situated. Most nurses have some level of community or public health background, and also exposure in sociology and communication. So I think we're really the perfect profession to advance our understanding about how environment impacts health, and also to engage the public in learning more about what they can do on an individual level, but also what they can do in their community and nationally to prevent these exposures that we know can cause health problems.
But I also know you've done a lot of work in the past, I don't know, half decade or decade with climate change. Tell us about why, and also what has been your engagement?
Work when I was at the University of Wisconsin really focused on methylmercury toxicity and fish consumption. And I worked with Dr. Henry Anderson, who was from the State Health Department, in looking at methylmercury levels in hair samples. And at that time, there was a lot of discussion about coal fire plants, which creates methylmercury, high levels of methylmercury poisoning, but also are culprits around greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide. And this was probably 15 years ago. And, you know, Al Gore's movie came out, and there was a big push in the public health community in Wisconsin to begin to look at coal fire plants and climate change. And so I felt really privileged to be part of that early on, and have worked on a number of research projects. Now I tend to focus primarily on the health impacts of kids, but I've also looked at adults in related to asthma attacks and hospitalizations, as well as myocardial infarction. Have published in this area. I've worked closely with the DC Department of Health, and actually will be hiring a postdoc in the next several months to work with me on expanding that research to look at whether characteristics such as humidity, as well as air quality,
and we talk a lot about the
and the impacts on hospitalizations
and
for kids,
the,
particularly around
idea
respiratory
that folks
disease.
Who are disadvantaged in whatever way, but primarily economically and education wise, that they're hit more significantly by climate change. Are you finding that? Are you looking at that?
Yes, absolutely. So part of what we look at is the GEO code, and EPA has a wonderful database called EJ Screen. And so we do look at, and some of our publications have particularly looked at in DC, the wards that are more poverty stricken are much more likely, significantly more likely to suffer when we have heat events, for example, and poor air quality. When the heat goes up, temperature goes up, air quality goes down. And oftentimes these communities already suffer from air pollution as a result of local industries. And so when we're seeing this consistent high heat, extreme heat, those poor communities are hit even harder.
You've been a champion with a small c, meaning you've really worked hard on many of these issues and have just been eternally committed to health and public health and children's health. You've also been a climate champion with a large c from the White House. Tell us about that experience.
Thanks, Beth. That experience, actually, I was surprised when I got the email from the White House. I had no idea I had been nominated by two different groups. It was quite an honor. The reason why I was nominated and honored was the advocacy work that I conducted around the, at the time it was Carbon Pollution Plan, now known as the Clean Power Plan, providing testimony, educating community and health providers. A lot of it was my work with the American Lung Association. And so it was a surprise. There was one other nurse who was honored with me, and she too worked closely with the American Lung Association. But I think for me, it highlights the importance of nurses working with other organizations who are committed to health, and not isolating ourselves and talking to one another, which is always fun and always important, but that we reach out to those groups who are working for the same causes, same goals. And I think in the end, it also highlights the important contributions that nursing can make.
Thank you. And that makes me want to ask about outreach to nurses. So, you know, Annie, as you know, is available for nurses who at any point in their career. And I'd like to talk with you about that. But first, I wanted to just address education for nurses. What are some of your thoughts and ideas or successes in terms of expanding awareness of environmental health in nursing programs?
Nursing has done a better job than medicine, for example. But we are also bound by the same structures that make change difficult. Board exams, for example, and inability of some faculty to embrace change. And so we know what we know, and we teach what we know. And if we don't know about environmental health impacts, then it becomes more challenging to get curriculum to change. But primarily from a national perspective, if it's not something that's going to be on the NCLEX, then most faculty feel that it's not important. And so what we need to do, and I think Annie has done a phenomenal job over time in getting faculty to appreciate that even if you teach one case study, it's better than nothing. And, you know, I've been a nurse for 40 years this year, and things take a long time to change. And one of the things I've learned is patience, and you have to repeat yourself oftentimes. And you do have to be happy with small wins and move forward. Now, probably 20 years ago now, I taught my very first class in environmental health nursing back when I was in Illinois, and we had a full class. It was an elective. Where are we today? Well, we're better. Of course, Annie has a free e-text that faculty can use, which is really phenomenal. I'm at an institution where I give many lectures every semester on environment and nursing. I also teach courses, such a whole course in environmental justice, but it's slow. We've been unable to get environmental health in the medical school, and the pediatric environmental health specialty unit that I direct, we have been really successful in teaching health providers through webinars. But when it comes to curriculum, it's a hard nut to crack. We taught almost 3,000 health providers last year alone in a variety of environmental health topics.
Wow, that's great. Thank you for doing that work. I totally agree. It's a huge gap, and I personally appreciate your efforts for it.
Thanks.
So if we think about practicing nurses or nurses who are not in school, a couple questions for you. One is to just talk a little bit about opportunities through Annie or elsewhere that you're aware of that could be for education or for engagement or for help and tips with getting involved, for advocacy, et cetera.
Okay, so for continuing education, obviously Annie is a wonderful organization, I think premier when it comes to nursing. And of course I'm biased, I'm one of the founders, but Annie has done a phenomenal job in really reaching out to nurses, whether it's, you know, through the research work group, the practice work group, the advocacy work group, or the education work group, in providing resources and webinars and continuing ed. Another really great resource is the Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Unit network. It's PEHSU.net. These are all free. They're all approved by the CDC. You just have to go online and register, and you can get one or more continuing education credits for a variety of topics on environmental health. And they have not only webinars, which are called their grand rounds, but they also have journal clubs and e-learning modules, which are like mini courses. There's really something for everybody on that that website. And so I would strongly encourage nurses to check that out. I worked this past year, it was either January or February of 2017 with AACN. And if you go on their website, they've linked into, and they've got this list for faculty. I worked closely with them to say, you know, which ones would be more appropriate for nurses than others. And so if you go to AACN, they have that listed as well. And so for people who are faculty, you can tap into that resource and figure out what might be useful to plug into a course. There are other opportunities, not always designed strictly for nurses, but the American Academy of Pediatrics, for example, has webinars, etc. There's another great group called out of National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, designed strictly for nurses, but the American Academy of Pediatrics, for example, has webinars, etc. There's another great group called out of National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, PEPH. And if you look that up, there are webinars. They had just one. They just had one last week on coal ash and health impacts. I think there are lots of opportunities. And of course, my center has webinars, sometimes in partnership with Annie, that are available for CE credit. We have some posted on our website as well.
Let me ask you, and this doesn't have to apply to your work concerns or what's, you know, your commitments, what's on your plate, but when you just sit back with and look at, you know, our time in history and what you know about this and about health, what is your biggest concern right now?
My biggest concern is climate change. I really think that we've missed our opportunity to mitigate at a level that's going to help us prevent some of the impacts that we're seeing right now. I think, you know, hurricane, category 5 hurricanes this fall, we've had wildfires in Montana and California, flooding. We saw in Houston that we are not prepared for all hazards, right? So we may protect people from flooding or from hurricane winds, but we're not prepared for if the flooding takes out a chemical plant and takes all those chemicals and puts it in the water. We're just simply not prepared. And their climate touches all of us. None of us are immune. And nurses will be at the front lines, whether they're working in hospitals, whether they're working in communities or schools. I met with someone just this week who's doing work post Fukushima. And, you know, we haven't even begun to think about nuclear plant impacts as climate threatens us, these extreme weather events. And I think that nurses have the capacity to prepare and think progressively on what needs to be done. And I think we have a great opportunity right now, but I would say that is the most important health threat impacting every nurse and every community across the world.
Knowing that nurses are the most trusted voice mm-hmm. in America mm-hmm. in terms of a profession, mm-hmm. and every 100th American is a nurse, you know, we are everywhere and we are well regarded. Mm-hmm. If you had the bully pulpit, which you do right this minute, mm-hmm. what would you say to your mm-hmm. friends, family, community, mm-hmm. nation, state, world?
If you want the real deal and you don't want fake news, you need to talk to a nurse. You need to engage and work closely with nurses, whether it's at a local, state, regional, or national level. And I need to also say to nurses, you know, don't limit, share your expertise and knowledge beyond the four walls of wherever you're working, and embrace, what we, our gifts and our contributions, beyond sort of the 9 to 5 or 7 to 3 work shift, whatever it is, 7 to 7. I think that my experience has been when nurses tap into their potential, the ability to solve problems is exponential. And I think we're really going to need that. We really need to work collectively to be able to solve these problems. These are not very easily solved, and they're not quickly solved. And we really need to be hopeful and faithful that by combining our energies, that we can do good things for everybody.
That's great advice. I want to follow up just with one thing that I have found and I struggle with a bit, and I wondered if you had wisdom on it. Mm. And it's related to something you said, which mm-hmm. is to remember that our nursing knowledge and expertise extends beyond mm-hmm. the 9 to 5 and beyond the walls where we work. That's something I don't always see nurses translating, you know, partly because they're very busy and jobs are hard and stressful. And I understand that. And yet the health impacts of all that we do is much broader than that. So I wondered if you had any wisdom on that subject.
Yeah. And I can give you a quick story. I was one of those people. I was working on my doctorate. I was working full time. I was raising a kid. I didn't have any time for anything. And I lived in a semi-rural area, and there was a housing development that was going up just behind us. And I got a knock on a door from one of my neighbors who said, "I understand that you're a nurse, and I understand that you have some knowledge about environment and health." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, we really need you. We're uncovering that there was going to be a Superfund site designation right behind our homes, and they want to build on it, and we're really concerned about the environmental impacts." Oh. And so I let him in the house and we sat down and I looked at the maps and I said, "Okay, I'll do it." And the only thing that kept that development from being built was the environmental hazards. This guy was a farmer. He let people dump for truckloads of stuff, any chemical you can think of, transformers. And he died before it became a Superfund site. So the developer could purchase it with scot-free without having to consider any of the pollutants. And they were going to put the playground exactly over the hotspot because the designation for pollution was less if it was open. They couldn't build a house on it, but they could put the kids' playground. So a year later, it was a lot of time. It was a lot of energy. As many small governments are, there was a lot of backdoor dealing. I was interviewed by the newspapers, went to every meeting, and we were able to stop the development until they got a letter of remediation from the EPA. Now, it sounds pretty simple, but it took a lot of work. And that development still has not happened. So my point is that we have to decide what our passion is. And if it's air or water or kids or schools, whatever it is, we don't have to fix everything. There's just no way we can. And I, to this day, still say no to people when I feel like either I don't have the expertise or I don't have the time. But you have to say yes once in a while, and you have to be the voice of people that don't have a voice and don't have the skills. And I learned a lot. I did a lot of research. I learned to work with people that sometimes I really didn't want to work with for the same end. And so my motto is say yes first, and then you can always back off later, but be open and be willing to work with others, because I really don't think nurses believe they have the skill set that it takes, but we really do. That's why I mentioned communication and, you know, sociology and all those things that we sort of take for granted as a nurse, and public health and community health and partnerships. We're really good at that. And it comes naturally to us, for most of us. And we take it for granted, and we shouldn't. Because most of the time it's engaging people and communicating in ways that people understand and will be mobilized once they understand the real impacts to them or their family or their kids or their grandkids.
That's so inspiring, Laura. Thank you. And not only do nurses have these skills that come from actually learning to listen to people and learning how to communicate with people, but also we're anchored to those commitments of our profession, right, which includes health, exactly, and it includes justice, exactly, and it includes honesty and integrity. Mm-hmm. So I really agree that it's a perfect launching point. Mm-hmm. But I just want to give you credit for being a true champion for many years, and also a reliable rudder. So your steerage is right. You're going in it's such a sensible direction. It's just hard to argue with. So thank you so much, from a professional point of view, for being a great role model and for helping keep nursing on the map. And then also for your personal contributions. It's just really remarkable.
Well, appreciate thanks. It. Same to you, Beth. And this is a great opportunity for nurses to learn about what each of us do, because most of us are so busy, we don't have time to just sit and chat about it. So this is a great format and venue for us to learn about each other. So thanks for doing this.
You betcha. Well, it's been my pleasure to talk with Laura Anderko today. And Laura, anything else you want to add?
Nope. Just, be hopeful and move forward.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, thanks so much. And for those of you listening, this has been the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. We have a number of them on the website, the environ.org website, which is the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. Please check it out. And also, if you have the opportunity, rank us on the iTunes podcast platform, because then that makes it move up and people can find us more easily. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye.